All right. Welcome. John again here. Episode 7 of High Minded Seeking Righteousness. Thanks for listening in. Figured I'd knock a few out. So today we're talking about commitment. Commitment. And as always, I like to start out with the definition so we know that we're on the same page. What I mean by commitment. Commitment's interesting because there is two sides of this, and they're very significant. The definition of commitment. Definition one is the state or quality of being dedicated to a cause, activity, etc., or a pledge or undertaking. Now, we are talking about the pledge or undertaking here, and of course, being dedicated to a cause or activity, making a commitment to something. In these terms, you know, dedication, loyalty, faithfulness, fidelity, attentiveness, devotion, or a vow, a promise, a pledge, an oath. As a military man, we know about these things, and also being married and ultimately divorced, I can see that there's, I have some experience with commitments and or the lack thereof. The second definition of commitment is an engagement or obligation. Now listen to this part. An engagement or obligation that restricts freedom of action, responsibility, obligation, duty, liability, burden, or pressure. Interesting. Two definitions there. An engagement or obligation that restricts freedom of action. Very interesting indeed. Now, the importance, commitments must be taken seriously. We discussed a lot of other issues surrounding these other concepts and consideration and understanding, and then following it up with respectfulness and then honesty. We talked about how honesty is very significant and need be given a lot of attention. Commitment is also something, and I do instill this in my kids. Commitment is something, people talk about a fear of commitment. Oh, you should have a fear of commitment, people. Everybody should have a healthy concern, not fear, let's take it, or a healthy respect for commitment and making a commitment. We live in a world where divorce is greater than 50%. So, you know, I don't really judgment on that sort of thing. People know, people get into relationships, but making commitments to each other is, or to other people, is very, very significant. Even making commitments to do something, making an oath, committing yourself, you must take that seriously on this road to seeking righteousness. Otherwise, you're behaving poorly, you're behaving unrighteously, and that's not where we want to go. And I want to jump in here and say, give you the perspective, right out of the gate of the Bible's position on commitments and oaths in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. And Corinthians is also the chapter that brings us through what love is. Love is patient, love is kind, you know, and we'll get into that when we get into the episode about love, which I said is the greatest of these and requires the most attention. But that same book of the Bible says, are you in 1 Corinthians 7, chapter 7, verse 27, it says, are you pledged to a woman or a man, if you're a woman? Do not seek to be released. If you've pledged yourself to someone, don't seek to be released. And it follows up that same verse. Are you free of from such a commitment? Do not look for a wife. So it's telling you, look, if you're committed, don't seek to be released from that commitment. And if you don't, if you're not committed, don't seek to get into that commitment. Now, ultimately, God will put these things and bring people across your paths. And sometimes, you know, the world will stop. There'll be missed opportunities for that great love, for that true love that people talk about, that connection. And we'll get into that. And I have to talk a little bit about love and also loyalty when we're talking about commitment. because it's in relationships. You're committed to your family. You're committed to your employer, hopefully. You're committed to your country if you're in the military, or hopefully you're committed to your country even if you're not loyal, you know, not in the military. You still have a sense of loyalty to your country. These commitments are very serious. In Matthew chapter 5, verse 34 through verse 37, he says, But I tell you, do not swear an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is God's throne, or by earth, for it's his footstool, or by Jerusalem, the city, for it is the city of the great king. And don't swear by your own head, and people will swear by their kids and all this other stuff, because you can't even make one hair white or black. You can't do anything about this. Swearing by these things, you have no effect. Again, I'm filling in here. All you need to say is simply yes or no. Anything beyond this comes from the evil one. And what he's talking about here is that if you're regularly engaged in deceptive practices, people will depend on this swearing. They say, I swear to God. I swear on my kids. I swear by this. I swear on that, to convince you of the truth. The only reason that you need do that is if people doubt your regular word, right? If somebody, that swearing means that your yes to them is not yes and your no is not no. So that's when you dilute your words with dishonesty, as we spoke about in the previous episode. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. Or King James Version, let your yea be yea and your nay be nay. If you say yes, then mean yes. And if you say no, then mean no. And you should not need to get into these other oaths, swearing an oath. Don't swear by anything. You need not. Practice making sure that your words mean something. Otherwise, you end up having to say, you have to convince the person and you have to swear and you think there's no value to it. Don't even go down that road. But you can see the seriousness of these commitments, these oaths, these pledges. And there are times, don't seek them, but sometimes you'll cross paths and you'll know because you're willing to be committed completely to this other person. And especially, you know, someone like me, for example, you know, I've been very hesitant, even though I have been married twice before. I've never proposed to anyone, which is a very interesting fact. I've always kind of been pressured or moved into getting married by whoever my significant other was at the time. And I do understand that when I talk about these people and these examples that I have, I do love these people and I do understand why I've done things, you know, and I know why they've done the things that they've done, and I don't hold any of this against them. None of this is something that is intended to say anything more than these people are human beings just like me. And that's why I use myself also as examples. And I won't use the specific people, but I've never proposed to anyone. I've always been kind of, I don't want to say pressured into, I've been put in situations where I just went along with it, you know what I mean? Because I did love the women, and sure, I'd go. But I never really met that woman. I think I did, though. You know, and it's unfortunate that you also hear about these paths crossing, where you meet someone and you feel that connection. And there's times where God puts on your heart that you're willing to make that commitment. Otherwise, you don't feel the natural desire to commit to the other person. If it's a spiritual connection or an otherworldly or a supernatural connection, there's a line from where true love is your soul's recognition of its counterpoint in another person. Your soul's feeling something different, feeling something important, feeling something supernatural. Some men and women are drawn, they feel that, to their country. They feel that desire to defend. They love their country, or they have a desire and nobility that they would be willing to put their life on the line. That's really where that commitment comes to it, where you've got to understand the level of commitment. There's also the business side of it. And, committing to do something for friends, even, which is why I stay out of relationships that are based on what somebody can do for me or what I can do for them. A friend once recently said to me, I'm sorry I haven't been there for you like I should. And I don't know what that was about. All I could presume was possibly that he feels I haven't been there for him like he thinks maybe I should have. But I had to respond to him, I don't feel that you should be there for me at all. I just think you're a cool dude. I like hanging out with you when I can. You know what I mean? I miss that time together. I don't require, our relationship has no requirements on him and I being, him needing to be a shoulder to lean on. So those come along. Those things happen because you feel bad for the person, or you feel, you want to be there for them. The desire is natural. The instinct is there. But I don't require any of that in a relationship. That adds weight, and it makes it less than a true friendship. The true friendship is only that you enjoy. There need be no commitment in friendship. And there are people that will pledge. In the old days, there used to be, when a friendship becomes something different, they pledge their sword to defend someone. And those things were good. Those are honorable. Those are noble things. And as long as you keep those commitments. But those aren't these friendships that we have today. You can catch someone's back, and hopefully that comes naturally. You shouldn't have to, so you should know that somebody has your back, no matter what, or under certain circumstances, but you still shouldn't require it of that relationship. The commitment, keep it out of things as long as you can, because what you end up with is something called an asymmetrically committed relationship. They're calling them ACRs, asymmetrically committed relationships, which you can just understand what that means. A little sip of some Joe, a little cup of Joe. Asymmetrically committed relationships, meaning one person is more committed to the relationship than the other. And this was something that was, addressed back in the 60s. By a sociologist, can't remember his name, Black or something, Paul Black, I can't remember. Either way, he said something along the lines of that. If one person in the relationship is considerably more involved than the other, the greater commitment is going to invite exploitation. It's going to provoke feelings of entrapment. And ultimately, that's going to destroy love. It will obliterate the relationship. Obliterate was the word that he used. And I'll look up the quote. But it's a destructive situation when one person is more committed to the relationship than the other. Now, that's where these true love things come in, where that soul connection, where one person or both people are head over heels, you know what I mean? Where both people are ready and willing to commit 100%. Now, those things in today's society take a long, prolonged time, unless it's that love at first sight thing. Purple roses. Love at first sight. Purple roses are a sign of that. But I've experienced that. Unfortunately, the way the world is set up, there's a lot of barriers to it and a lot of uncertainty, and it's very difficult because we don't hear these stories anymore. People will tell the stories of their grandparents and their, even their parents, some older folks, but a couple of generations before us, that they had that true love, that they had that 100% commitment to each other. They just enjoyed each other's company when they were around each other, and they thought about each other when they weren't together, and they were just naturally considerate and naturally understanding and naturally respectful and kind, and that true love thing. But today's world, we don't see it. We don't hear it. We don't hear about these magical stories, these crazy circumstances that arise that bring two people from different sides of the country together. And through all circumstances and strife, they make it through, considering overcoming obstacles to be together. You know, the soldier that goes off to war and is always writing letters to his loved one and comes home and she's there to meet. These things, we got a 20% success rate for marriage in this country nowadays. So it's not that we're going down a bad road as far as relationships in this country. I would say in the world, but I can only speak specifically for the country. But there's a lot of, I mean, let's be honest, we live in the Tinder generation. Single-serving relationships. And I've even subscribed to that, because otherwise you're going to find yourself dealing with a lot of pain. You know, and that's why it is significant when you meet someone that is ready for the relationship, is ready for the commitment, is on the same level that you know you don't want to be apart. But commitment is very important, because you have to take it seriously. If you commit to the wrong person, which I've done, which other people, let's say even people that were with me, they've committed to the wrong person. I wasn't the right person to commit to. I've committed in business to the wrong people. And I know, I'll tell a story. There was a guy that I worked with. He was my boss, my direct supervisor. We worked very well together. He gave me a lot of freedom. I gave him a lot of freedom. We knew what each of us was doing. We didn't really get our hands in each other's stuff. And he was a good dude. He was a good dude. But he locked arms with a business partner that was not a good dude. He locked arms with a business partner that was just genuinely a bad guy. Greedy. He would give, you know, I wouldn't say he wasn't generous. I mean, he would give money, but he would do it in exchange for servitude. It was a very, and he didn't have a genuine concern for the lives of other people, for patients, which is what he was dealing with. But I knew it. I knew the good guy had locked arms with the bad guy, and he had committed to him in one fashion or another. And that commitment he could not undo. And ultimately he pulled him through a lot of mud, pulled him through a lot of crap. And he put him at odds with people that he shouldn't have put him at, that he wouldn't have been at odds with. Ultimately, you know, it was what it was. But that commitment, you got to take seriously. You've got to take some time to understand who you're locking arms with. Now, it goes back to, now we've talked about on the business side, if you partner with someone who's, and you make a commitment to be their business partner, and they're not as committed, or they're a bad guy, then it's going to pull this guy through the mud. Now, similarly, on a relationship side, though, we have multiple levels of commitment here. Now, we can specifically understand the marriage is the most significant commitment that you could make to your significant other. That proposal, when you propose to them, and again, to this point, I have not. Unfortunately, I have said the vows, the marriage vows. But, you know, I regret, I had no choice. Things were as they were. But you should take those seriously. But when you propose to someone as a man, or when you go down that road to agree, when you accept a proposal from someone, it should be pure and true. You should understand what you're getting into. because there's significant also when you get into an asymmetrically committed relationship, as they call them, there's a weak link and there's a strong link, meaning that there's one person who's contributing to the relationship in the most significant way, and the other one is just bouncing around, not really committed to the other person's happiness or the strength of the relationship. They're just living their life and living this life with this other person, and more than most likely exploiting the other person or provoking feelings of entrapment in the other person because they're not symmetrically committed. And I know that feeling. I know that feeling of carrying the weight of the relationship. And then there was a time where I could not carry the weight anymore. Circumstances had changed, and I needed to bend on the weak link to carry the weight, and they abandoned ship. Everything fell apart. But that's, again, I don't blame the other person because I should not have gotten myself in that situation, and they shouldn't have gotten themselves in that situation. But in those relationships where one person, one lover, is considerably more involved than the other, the greater commitment invites exploitation, and it provokes feelings of entrapment, both of which obliterate love. That's the quote. Now, it's a double-edged sword, because firstly, people that are in less committed to the relationship, or people that are less committed to the relationships they're in, those relationships have problems. So in less committed relationships where we've got this asymmetrical, there's going to be problems in that relationship because that commitment is not strong. They're not married. You know, it would be more difficult for that person who's, you know, in the weak and not, she didn't have a commitment. So it's more difficult to feel more committed when you don't have a commitment. And then the relationships are going to have more problems because of that. And then because of those problems, there's going to be a less likely chance that there's going to be more commitment. It's a recipe for disaster, which is why these small steps, when somebody agrees to, you know, different things along the way, they find themselves in a situation where suddenly you're living with someone, you have children, you've gone down this road, and it's off balance. You're not committed enough, so you're going to have problems, and you're going to have problems, so you're not going to, because of your problems, you're not going to want to get committed more. So it becomes this catch-22 situation where you can't really get out of it. You're doomed to failure. But where you can find two people that are both committed, which is where marriage, we know we've got that standard in that marriage point, that proposal to someone to ask them to marry you, and that agreement at that point that you will be married, and that commitment to each other. When you have that universal commitment with 100% commitment there on both sides, you've set the relationship up for success. Now, as long as, again, you take some time with that, and you have to determine the most important thing, is this person truly committed to me? And am I truly committed to them? And as difficult and as complicated as commitment can seem, it's just as simple as that. If they're not truly committed to you, and if you're not truly, or if you're not truly committed to them, it's a double-edged, you're in a bad situation. These asymmetrically committed relationships arise, and you have to avoid those, and you have the most important thing. And it's where that's why these soulmates, these connections that are different than any other connection you have, when you come across these things, you have to take them seriously. You have to understand that these don't exist, where people, because of the way society is set up, lose those opportunities. I'm sure every single one of my listeners, and I know I've spoken to people I mean, even exes that I've been with, who we clearly were not soulmates, but they had these connections and they could tell me who was the love of their life. And sometimes, you know, it wasn't me, it was some other person maybe or whatever. And, oh, well, this person before you, they'd say, or whatever. Or, oh, I remember this little thing. I had this time with this guy, or, and I was just talking to a girl at the bar, and she was telling me that the love of her life is in jail. Her soulmate's in jail right now. And that's a horrible thing. But I believed her because of the way she spoke about him. The way she spoke about him. It was unfortunate. She was informing me that she had a guy who took good care of her, bought her a car when she needed a car, helped her get back on her feet, was still kind of taking care of some things, helping her through some of her problems. A good guy, but he wasn't the love of her life. She didn't talk about him. She actually spoke about him in a way that was kind of a pity, that she felt bad for being with this guy, because she would never be able to love him the way. And she even told me when this other gentleman, who was the love of her life, who was in jail, her soulmate, who was in jail, when he gets out of jail, he's going to come get her, and she's going to go without a second's glance, without a look back, without looking back at all. And I understand that, and I do get that. And just sadly, as broken as that scenario seems on its face, I understood it. I understood it because there is, and I think that everybody can search their heart and find that person that if they came and said, "I want to marry you right now," or at least gave you, if you're a man, gave you the indication that they wanted you to commit to them, that you would drop what you're doing and go be with this person. I think we all have that, and I think that that's important. That's the only time that I would say throw caution to the wind and get married, propose, and no, you'd have to know the feeling, the intensity, that recognition of your soul's counterpart in another person. Your soul's recognition of its counterpart in another person. And sometimes it's very unlikely. It's very unlikely. Sometimes it's weird. You know, it could be passers-by, strangers in the night. Who knows? But it's happened. And it's typically, you know, I don't know if there's only one person for everyone. There may be multiple people that you could have that connection with. But those things are worth pursuing. But before you commit, even with those people, you have to have that conversation about expectations, about who they are, about, you have to know ultimately that you have to have the behavior of love. That feeling is the step that brings the two of you together. It's that connection. It's the same black line that was drawn on me, it's drawn on you. It's Jacob Dylan, Wallflowers. Incredible song. But poignant, pertinent, that connection, there's something drawn between these two people that no matter time or distance or whatever seems to remain intact throughout. But you have to have that discussion, and you have to understand the behavior of love. And as I said, this is episode 7 here. 8 is going to be on hope. 9 is going to be on faith. And episode 10 for this season is going to be on love. And I'm going to try to keep that one to an hour, but we shall see. But once you find that once your soul recognizes its counterpoint in another, then you need to develop the behavior of loving that person. Not just the feeling, but the behavior of loving them, so that they can tell you that you love them. All right, now I want to go into the aspect of the definition of commitment, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on this one, but it is the actual aspect of this commitment where an engagement or an obligation that restricts freedom of action. So the other aspect is it's going to restrict freedom. So hopefully you want to be with somebody that enjoys the same things. Like I always enjoyed going to, you don't want to be restricted. Like if I enjoy going to Fire Island, you want to be with somebody that enjoys that, going to the beach and that enjoys being outside and just enjoying the sun or enjoying the breeze or enjoying the weather. And you want to make sure that you're aligned with that. If you like to go out to eat and, you know, have a drink and relax and listen to music. If you like to go see live bands, I love to see live bands. You want to make sure that you're with someone that enjoys those things so that in your commitment to this person, you're not restricted in the freedom or the movement in the things that you enjoy and the things that are important to you. You want to make sure that you're equally yoked as far as the things that are important to you. Your faith. My mama used to say that it takes three people to make a marriage. The two people and God. But that's important for me. Of course, you could say, well, I know there are some relationships that there's two people that don't, you know, they're atheists maybe, and they don't need, but their relationship works because they're equally yoked. They both are on the same page as far as their belief systems, and they respect each other's belief systems and what they believe in. It's a difficult situation when you have to, when somebody's not open to your belief system, when they're not on the same page. And you don't want somebody restricting things that are important to you. You want to be able to do the things. You want somebody who wants to do the things that you want to do, that wants to spend time with you. You know, that you both want to spend time with each other. You know, these are things that are important, and that, you know, that there is a sense of uniform. When you get into a situation where you're dealing with somebody who's this my truth and your truth and this sliding scale or this dynamic up and down, you never know, oh, well, my truth is this and your truth is that. You got to have a steady, even, you have to have a uniform point of truth, which is why in a Christian relationship that the Bible is so important, or that you have a uniform standard that you're going to adhere to and hold each other to in this commitment, and that you're not going to restrict each other in ways that you don't want to be restricted, or that you should not be restricted. So that being said, this commitment, going into this commitment, so the steps for these things, we talked about the business side, pretty easy. Just make sure that you're not dealing with a scumbag when you're getting into a business relationship. Make sure you're getting in bed, so to speak, with somebody who's like-minded and on the same mission as you are in the business side of it. In your friendships, don't make commitments. Friendship is not about commitments. You will, in a good friendship, you will innately feel commitments to this person because you like them, respect them, and your relationship has yielded that. But once you put requirements and expectations on the relationship, and I've seen it. I've seen a relationship recently with two friends that were great friends for a long period of time. And over time, they started to establish expectations of each other. They started to establish a give and take. Well, because of our relationship, you know, if you don't do this, then we're not friends. And if you don't do that, then we're not friends. I'll use an example where a friend and I disagreed on something, a great friend of mine, who I had spent a long time apart. And, you know, about 5 years ago, maybe, we reconnected and we disagreed on something political. It was political nonsense. And I was just in a bad mood and I got upset and I said, you know, maybe it's time we part ways out of anger. And because of this political thing, I lost a very valuable friend. And that was a relationship that, you know, it did not need that. Now, I did turn around and I realized my mistake and I did everything in my power. And luckily, she wasn't difficult. She understood and she forgave me very quickly, as she did, as she would, because she is a good friend. And I believe that she valued our friendship as much as I did. So it was fantastic. And, you know, I went and she had her back to me, if you want to, metaphorically speaking, as when you break a relationship, you know, you can repair it, but it takes work. And, you know, hopefully the person doesn't make you get down on your knees and beg. There are those people that will do that, and that requirement should not be, and that's unhealthy. But, you know, hopefully you can go to that person after you've done and say, with genuine sincerity, I'm so sorry for being a jerk, for being an idiot. And if there's anything I can do for you to forgive me, and hopefully, I forgive you right away. Thank you for saying it. Let's just pick up where we left off, because I missed you. And I'm glad to have our friendship back. And that was encouraging to me. It showed me that I could repair places. So in friendships, it's more about how you feel about the person. You don't want to get into commitments with those, because they can cause problems. They can cause expectation. But in the absence of expectation, then you can't accelerate to the next level. At some point, you have to put expectations on yourself if you want to commit to this person. And you have to be clear and transparent about your expectations, and they have to be clear and transparent about their expectations. And that relationship is something more. And like I said, when you recognize, the soul recognizes its counterpoint in another soul, then hopefully you give everything you can into that, and you're willing. And if it is mutual, then the other person is not going to make you walk all the way. It's not going to make you get down. They're going to take a few steps in your direction, even minor, especially if you're the one that, if you've done any damage or you've done any hurt, the person who's done the hurt may have to take a few more steps, or a lot more steps, thousands of miles of steps, or over 1,000 miles of steps. And then even more, and, you know, maybe do a little song and dance. Whatever needs to be done, you got to make sure that you give it everything, and that it's worth it for that commitment. If you do it, if somebody does that for you, maybe they're worth giving a little attention. Maybe they're worth saying, well, this person did do a lot. And maybe they're worth giving a little bit, a few moments of your time, or turning around and taking just a few steps towards them and trying to resolve things and trying to move to the next step. But you've got to make sure that you're not restricting the other person, that in that commitment, because as I said, that second part of commitment is it's an engagement or an obligation that restricts freedom of action. You can no longer be, dating multiple people, or, you know, maybe you're with someone that can't dance, or maybe they just have a complete fear of dancing, but you love dancing. This commitment to each other needs to be acknowledged, and make sure that you're on the same page with what you both want to do. I love dancing. I love singing. I love a lot of things, but there are people that don't. And you got to make sure that you match up, and that this commitment, before you get in that commitment, it doesn't restrict the things that are important to you. Otherwise, you'll end up feeling those feelings of obligation, or the feelings of entrapment, feeling that you can't move, restriction. You'll feel it. The things that you used to enjoy, you can no longer do because of your commitment to this person. Or sometimes you're willing to sacrifice. Sometimes you're willing to say, like, yes, I can deal with it. And it's not universal for all people. I once knew two women, and one, they were similar. One of them, let's say they both One of them dressed very provocatively, if you will. I mean, it was, and she, you know, she was clear about it, she, what her intentions were, but she was very much not the type of woman that you would want to, at least that I would want to be in a committed relationship, because she would flaunt it to every guy all over the place. She was the type that was showing everything she got, flirting with every single guy that looked her way. And it was, to me, not okay. Like, I don't want to say anything about, but I didn't like that in this woman. And it hurt me specifically because I was in a relationship with this person at some point. But, you know, it was just, she loved the attention. And that was what it was about. And that wasn't okay with me. And I should not have been in any. And luckily, I didn't get in any committed relationship beyond, although it was what it was. But then I was with another woman who didn't dress, you know, provocatively. I don't want to use bad terms to offend anybody, but she dressed very sexy. She was a very sexy woman, for lack of a better term. And there is no better term. She was. The other woman said, how can you be with her? She dresses sexy. I dress sexy. You hate when I dress sexy. What about her? I said, well, she's got really good resting bitch face. And this is, again, a very good, it's a very valuable asset, or at least for me, that a woman that I'm with doesn't have eyes for any other man when she's with me, versus the woman who was, again, flaunting it. And any, you know, making eyes and footsies and flirting with any other guy that she could and showing up. This woman, although she always looked very good, she always looked very good. And of course, everybody likes attention. I like attention. Everybody likes attention, but she didn't indulge it. Let's call woman A Martha again. And let's use Julie for woman B. Julie dressed very sexy, but it was clear to every other man in the room that she was mine. Whereas Martha, it was not. It was almost, you know, Fredo from, and that's what people, if you know the reference, Fredo in the beginning of The Godfather 1, you know, and I just am like, you know, you got to control your voice. It's an embarrassment. When a woman is disloyal, and it's an embarrassment when a man is disloyal. If a man is doing the same thing, I'm not a woman, so I can only speak from my position. But I would presume it's the same if the guy is running around with other women or flirting around with any other women, that it would be an embarrassment to the woman he's with that he's doing that. So there's a difference in that you need to check to make sure that before you commit to someone, that who they are is somebody that meets your requirements or doesn't hurt your heart or restrict or doesn't obligate you to someone that's going to be in. And more power to them. More power to, if you want to do it, do it. And maybe there's a guy that loves that. There are, I think, some men that like their woman flaunting it all over, and maybe, but that's not me. So I got to make sure that, even though it's not the matter, the issue, the women can both wear the exact same outfit. It's about the behavior, and that's something that's important to me. So before I commit to Martha, that would have to have been gone, or that would have to have been, and instead of it being gone, it ended up being sneakily done. Whereas Julie, very clear, that beautiful woman, very appealing, but not interested in anyone else except the man she's with, the man who's committed to her, at least. So, that being said, I'm going to cut things short here. I think I've covered just about everything on commitment. You've got to be concerned that the person you're with is on the same page as you, or that you're going, before you get into any commitments, that you're both on the same page about what you want, and that you're willing to give each other everything that you have and require of each other only what you've established in the beginning. And make sure that you don't restrict each other's happiness, that you are in alignment with what you would like to do together, what you envision your life together to be, and discuss those things. And Open lines of communications are paramount. Open line of communications. It's very difficult. And time does pass. And one person moves on, and another person, and you miss opportunities when you don't communicate. And you say, well, if you would have just said, or if you would have just done this, or if I would have just said, or if I would have just done this, if only, if only. So you have to take it seriously, the work that needs to be done and the commitment and the steps towards each other to have that open communication before you commit. And then commit 100%. Don't half-ass it. Get all in or all out. But when you're ready to commit, be all in. All right, on that note, I'm going to end it. Thank you again for listening to me ramble on. I do enjoy the process. I do enjoy the conversation, or not the conversation, but the company, if you will, because I know you're there. And thanks for being here. Bye.